Welcome to another episode of Living Your Sparked Second Half. Today's episode is with Nick Demos, a returning guest. And you may notice if you watch this on my YouTube channel that I'm in a different place. I have a different backdrop. This is my home upstairs office, and I might record more often from here because I have this new headset, which is like a microphone. I feel like a pilot. It's a microphone and headphones all in one. And so, yeah. And so this is where I work all day. But today I interviewed Nick for the podcast because I wanted to share with you his most recent piece of work, which is brilliant. It's a documentary about fibromyalgia. It's called Invisible, the film. And I learned so much from watching the documentary. And I knew he had released it. And I saw him recently. And I told him I wanted him to come on the program to talk about it, but I hadn't watched it yet. And so I watched it. And I'm kind of glad I didn't watch it when I saw him, because I probably would ask him a lot of questions that I asked him on the interview. And that way it was like everything fresh off my, I'd taken notes and I had, because I'm a very curious person and I wanted to know more. And so he's great. He's so open and honest and shares the journey that he experienced while doing this film. And I'm not going to go into it because I go into it in the interview, but it is a very personal journey, as it turns out. So if you know of somebody who has fibromyalgia, or if you are living with someone or have a family member or have it yourself, then number one, I urge you to listen to this documentary. And number two, share this episode with them. Because even if you don't watch the documentary, you will learn a lot from just the conversation I have with Nick. And you'll want to watch it probably after a couple of the little teasers that I share. But it's a really great conversation. And I know you'll love Nick. He's got so much energy. He's a lovely human being. And very, gosh, he has so many interests, and he has expertise in so many different areas. And we talk about that, and that some of what he does, and a lot of what he does, is very helpful to his disease and keeping his symptoms kind of minimized. So, without further ado, let's get to the interview now. Hi, I'm Lori Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place for women in their second half of life to go to receive inspiration. If you are at a place where you believe your best days are behind you, it is my hope one of these episodes will spark you to think differently and lead you to a new belief that your second half may actually be your best half. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that the younger you never had. So it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age or circumstances hold you back from the pursuit of a more fulfilling and fun life. The happier we are, the better the world will be. So instead of settling for what you don't want, how about going after what you do want? Listen in and let something you hear prompt you to take the first step in making the rest your best. Hello, we are here today with Nick Demos. I had promised you last week, if you heard the episode last week, which was a replay of his previous interview, which we did in May 2020. I can't believe, Nick, it's been so long. You were only like 49 then. So
I was 49 at the time.
Are you still 49? You haven't aged.
Sure,
I did the math. I'm like, I think you're over 50 now.
I mean, yeah. Like, pandemic was sort of dog years, right? So yeah. We get a little extra, you know.
Yeah.
They don't count those years.
You're in the cool club now.
I am in the cool club. But I am in the 50s club, and it's really cool.
Yes. The 50s have been, and the 60s, best
and
decades.
60s.
Yeah. So I'm so excited for you to be here today to talk about your documentary. And if, by the way, just want to mention, if you didn't listen to his original episode, like I said, I republished it last week. So go back and listen to that, because that gives you the whole backstory of Nick. And he has a fascinating life. He's had a fascinating life. He has done so many different things. He's very talented. And one of the things he does is he tells stories.
I tell stories in various forms. Let's put
various
it
forms. Yes, yes. But he's also a major manifester. I've had the opportunity to see Nick in person twice in like the last month at two different retreats. And one of the times we were actually talking about something about how he manifests and people come up and he doesn't have to have people come to him. They just automatically come to him. And I tell you, it was so crazy because within 30 seconds of him saying that, somebody out of the blue walked up to him. And then the time on the clock was 11:11. It was just the craziest. I like got chills from that moment. So that was fun. He is a major manifester. And I think he's getting ready to develop a program about it, but I'll have to have you come back on when you do that program.
It'll be a third time guest that time.
Yeah, you'll be the third time guest.
Yeah.
So stop doing so many cool things.
I can't help myself. That's actually part of the problem.
That's true. Yes. He has so many interesting things. He's one of those people that has an idea and then he goes and implements it. But so let's talk about the documentary, because yeah. I wanted to watch it. And it's just one of those things that's on my list to do. And I actually sat down and did it today. And it was pretty emotional. And I think, and it's about fibromyalgia. And it is called Invisible, the film. And so I'm going to turn it over and let him talk about the journey to create that, because it was a 7-year journey, I think.
7 years.
Yeah.
7 years, yeah. To create the film.
Yeah.
So the inspiration for the film actually wasn't mine. It wasn't my idea. It was brought to me. One of the characters, the subjects in the film, her name is Megan, and she was diagnosed with fibromyalgia at 13 years old.
Mm.
And had been living with it. And she was sort of looking around, asking herself, well, why am I doing better than some people? Like, what am I doing that's different? And she was a competitive athlete.
She was the one on the rock climbing.
Yeah. Yeah. The one on the rock climbing. Mm-hmm. And she had this friend, Pallavi, who was a producer. This producer came to me to raise money. She wanted me to raise money for the film. That's why she brought it to me originally. And she said, do you know anything about fibromyalgia? And I said, well, actually, my mother has fibromyalgia and I don't really know anything about it. And that's really bad on me. And I feel like I need to know more. I need to understand this syndrome so I can help my mother, so I can help her get better. I wanted to at least try, because what I did know about fibromyalgia is that when you're diagnosed, you're basically handed a bunch of painkillers and said, you're going to be in pain the rest of your life. Good luck.
Yeah. Your mom, and I could tell in the film that you were surprised at the number of painkillers she was taking.
I was shocked. I truly thought she was on maybe one or two a day. I didn't realize that, you know, it was 6 painkillers a day. That was after they weaned her down a bit. I came to find out later. You know, they were handing her, and we're talking very strong pharmaceuticals. And
OxyContin was like,
yes,
what she got first.
That's what they first handed her, was Oxy. So when I found all that out, I was like, oh, I need to be more involved in raising money. I need to do this film. And so I decided to direct it and produce, obviously, but direct the film. And what I really wanted to do, the first initial intention of the film, was to set out on a journey to follow 3 women plus my mother over the course of 2 years and see what their struggles were and see what was working, what wasn't working, and sort of how that affected their relationships, how that affected their jobs, how that affected their... Other people might debate that, but for me, it's been easy to raise money for Broadway. And we put the show together. It was very interesting to me for the documentary is I went to all these people that I've raised money before And they were like, documentary, it's not flashy, it's not fun, it's not sexy, it's not Broadway. And so it was a big wake up call, because this is my first documentary to work on, of how difficult it is to raise money for documentary when you're wanting to bring awareness to a disease. That's the reason the film's called Invisible, is that it's not only is it an invisible disease, you can't see it, right? People look normal, they look healthy on the outside, but it's also invisible in terms of its visibility in the world. People don't know that much about it. What they know is very confused or confusing. So it was a process. It was a huge process just to get the film going. We were getting donations for a few dollars from people with fibromyalgia that were on disability, just because they were so desperate to have their story told. So I knew we would get to the finish line. I just didn't realize how long it was going to take, and the many twists and turns that sort of the documentary took.
Yeah. 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 So I took a lot of notes, because I wanted to share some of my ahas without giving the whole thing away. And we'll definitely put a link into how people can watch it. It's like an hour and 10 minutes or something, but it's really great. The little stories that are told. And then there's like at the end, a little, you know, I watch Dateline and those kind of things. And it's like where they are now kind of thing was good. But what shocked me was that fibromyalgia has been around since like 1600.
Yeah.
So it never was called that until like the 70s is what,
Until the 1970s, it wasn't really called that, but it has, the roots go back to the 1600s, but you know, it used to be women's hysteria. They would often call it women's hysteria. And part of the reason that it has taken so long for fibromyalgia to be seen, witnessed, to be called, even have an official name or title, is that it was a woman's disease or syndrome, rather. It's not technically considered a disease, depending on who you speak with. But because of that, there wasn't as much funding for studies. There wasn't as much, and it coincidentally became into knowing or knowledge around the time of the women's movement. How interesting is that? That women are standing for themselves and beginning to say, no, this is real. This isn't just my hysteria, my emotions. No, this is something that's really happening to me.
Yeah. And it was a statistic that was interesting. It was 75% of patients after adolescent are women, and that you couldn't, I don't know if you said this or somebody said it, is that men are less reluctant to share their story as well.
Yeah, I think I actually truly myself believe that, just from my now 7 years of study of fibromyalgia, that I actually think it's fairly close to 50-50.
And men just don't go and get diagnosed. Yeah.
Severely underreport, because men are taught as a society not to show weakness.
Suck it up.
How many times? Suck it up to your little boys, do you say it, right? And that's how I was raised, for sure, was not to say that I was feeling bad or say that I was dealing with something. I was just told to, you know, power through, suck it up, act like a man, you know? And so I think the women that have it were accused of being overly emotional, hypersensitive, and men basically stifled it all down and dealt with the pain.
Yeah. I did not realize until I watched this, because I had chronic fatigue syndrome. And so I was, you know, I had joint aches. I didn't have pain. Like, and I think I also have a high threshold for pain because I had natural childbirth. So I'm going to tough it out. Because I didn't want a shot. So I'll do whatever it takes. But I think that men, they'll suffer through the pain more easily than women will, I think. But I don't know.
I think because we've been taught that.
Yeah, probably. What happens is, surprisingly, and this is another statistic, is that there is a link that it's genetic as well. Yeah. And if you have a first degree relative with it, it's likely that, or it's 8 times more likely that you'll get it. And Nick didn't know when he started this documentary that it was going to impact him in such a personal way.
Yeah. Spoiler alert if you're watching.
Yeah. The but you know what? I heard it right before, before I watched it, I knew, but it didn't take away that almost suspense and that heartache of you. I mean, he filmed him getting the diagnosis.
Yeah. So what happened was, as we were filming over those couple of years, 2 years turned into 3, which turned into 4, I was looking around and saying, well, I have that symptom. Well, I had that symptom. Well, I fixed that, because I used to have something come up and I would go to the root of the problem and fix it. If I had dairy issues, so I stopped eating dairy. Okay, I'm fine now. I would have an injury. What things would happen? Like, I'd have an injury in one arm, but then I would be fine. And then it'd be on the other side, and I could never figure it out. And what was happening is, as we were filming, I began to piece it together of, well, that's me. That's me. Oh, that happens to me. And my producer, Pallavi, said, I think you should go get tested. And I think we should do it on camera. And I was like, okay. Honestly, it was that, like, okay, because there was that part of me that still didn't believe that it was true. I was in denial, ultimately. And part of it is that I had made these choices, these lifestyle choices, my entire life, to eat healthy, to work out, to practice yoga, to meditate, to do breath work, to do all of these things that actually help you. All the things that actually are really good for fibromyalgia, I was doing. I was naturally sensing it, and I was doing it. And my sort of the lifestyle that I lived, I was a professional dancer, so I constant movement. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't have a job where I sat all day long and got stiff and sore. And, you know, I just didn't have that. I was constantly moving and going and doing things, which ultimately proved to be beneficial to me in some ways. And in other ways, I would burn myself out. And so then I began piecing together, oh, about once or twice a year, I get these, like, I can't get out of bed for 5 days. I used to say that my battery was like drained. Like, I used to call myself the Energizer Bunny, right? Going and going and going and going and going until I stop. And when I would stop, I would like be out or down for the count. But I didn't realize that that could be fibromyalgia. So I went on camera, got tested, and indeed was told that I had fibro.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting how she went through feeling, and there, what kind of surprised me, obviously I know doctors know more than just me. If I were to feel your body, I probably wouldn't know, but she clearly pretty quickly knew.
She knew fast.
Yeah, but like, so the muscles, like, are these muscles like silently, like, you don't notice that they're, I mean, you might have the pain, but
it's inflammation.
It's not visible.
It's invisible.
Yeah.
But it's inflammation in the body. And there are these tender points, these points on the body that if you have a certain number in a certain number of places, they have determined is a test for fibromyalgia. And, you know, it was interesting because now I can watch the film. I watch the film back right now. And I'm like, oh, wow, she knew very quickly. But in the moment, I was in the moment. So I wasn't like noticing that, you know, like it's fascinating to be able to watch your own diagnosis on camera and to sort of see it all replay. But yeah, it's these swellings. And she really knew fast.
Yeah. Yeah. And what also I thought was interesting is that I think the doctors that you talked to had fibromyalgia. Like they.
So we very intentionally, not all of them, some of the doctors did and some didn't in the film, but we intentionally set out to reach out to the leading doctors of fibromyalgia in the US. And the majority of those leading doctors of fibromyalgia have fibromyalgia, which is really interesting, but it makes sense when you think about the fact that this is a syndrome that hasn't been widely recognized or known. And so they saw, when they were diagnosed, I think they saw a hole in the system that people needed help. And so I think they felt a calling to dedicate their practices and their lives to helping others with fibromyalgia.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is going to be a little teaser because people are going to want to see what this is, but the Frida Center.
Yeah.
That painting.
Yeah.
Powerful. That was like, and the Frida Center, it was named for this painter who was named Frida. And she did this painting and it's thought that she had fibromyalgia, but it was like so powerful of what, like it feels like yeah. that was picture what paints a thousand words. Is that the saying?
A thousand words. That's what they say about it. You know, that's part of film is picture making, right?
And yeah,
the interesting thing, and I think one of the reasons that image is so powerful and it was very important to us in the film is that here I am creating a film, which is a visual medium about something that's invisible. So how do you depict something that's invisible in a visual art form? Talk about a challenge, right? To set oneself up for a challenge. But that painting really, I think there's a reason you connected to it so much because it is such a great visual representation of fibromyalgia, yeah. What it feels like.
Yeah, I almost felt like, and I loved that doctor. She was amazing. It was almost like she was Frida in a previous life.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. I mean,
she would love to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a connection there for her.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is there no blood test? Is it really more kind of
there is no current blood test for it. And that's the problem. And that's why, many doctors over the years have poo-pooed it because for many doctors, it's like, well, where's the blood test? If there's no blood test, then it's not real. It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And
but aren't there brain scans you can do? Because like, yes. Yeah, it's like the fight or flight is in like hyperreactive. Yeah, yeah.
Hyperreactive overdrive. And, you know, one of the doctors in the film talks about how, let's say you get touched, a pain signal sent to the brain and it sends a signal back that says, I've been touched in a normal human. But in somebody with fibromyalgia, you get touched, you get up or a hit pain center, the pain gets sent, signal gets sent to the brain. It magnifies it about 100 times and sends the signal back. And so that is really, I think, powerful too, because that tells you why some days, and this is me, and this is me not knowing until after the fact, why I can't have a tag in a shirt. My entire life I've cut tags out. I can't have them. If something is scratchy, I can't wear it. There are days when you're in what they call a flare, which is a flare up, a fibro flare, they call it, where wearing clothes hurts. It hurts. Mm. So it's, yeah, I mean, it really, that's the magnification that he's talking about ultimately.
Well, there are nudist resorts. my parents lived in one, so that's a whole other.
That's a whole other episode.
Yeah, I talked about that a long time ago on an episode, but yeah, it's not. Oh, that is not genetic. Let me tell you. I want to know how your mom's doing because, one of the things she said that was made me so sad, and I know it made you sad too, is that she said, "I can't imagine living 30 years like this," and I know that there. Pain can cause you to take your own life or lose the will to live. Definitely. How's she doing?
So I'm really, really, really happy to report that she's doing incredibly well, that she got an early cut. She got to see an early version of the film. And because one of the things that we talk about a lot in the film is that the pharmaceuticals can be part of the treatment, but it can't be the whole treatment. And it's not necessarily right for everyone at a certain point.
Plus there's side effects from those drugs.
Yeah. Are honestly worse than the drugs themselves most of the time. And she was so inspired that she weaned herself off the medication.
Oh.
Yeah.
I just got chills.
And this is gonna make me teary. This is gonna make me cry. And she's doing better than she was before. And so the whole reason.
What a gift. What a gift.
The whole reason I did the documentary, the 7-year journey.
Well, and you said she was private too. Very private. Yeah.
Very private. And so I'm not, obviously. I'm crying in your podcast. I'm not so private. I went on camera. But my mother's very private. But it was really worth it, that whole 7-year journey, for her to have that moment. And yes, obviously we needed to do the film so that I could learn what I needed to learn about myself as well. But really that was what the whole 7 years was about for me. And hopefully, however many other people we can help as well. But on a personal level, that was the whole reason I wanted to do the documentary. And it has shifted her life. And so I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's going to help other people too, who might have an inkling that something's not right. And they don't know, they don't have the information of like, it's So interesting. You know, you're a healthy person. And I love the fact that you shared that. And it shows that you can be okay, you know, change your diet, do yoga, do the things. But one of the things that, were you drinking carrot juice?
Yeah.
Were you doing that with a juicer? That is carrot juice is supposed to be, I like started doing, this is like combination. I just finished. I'm just holding up my drink for people on the audio version of the podcast. But yeah, I just finished it. But I've been drinking that every day for like the past like 4 weeks. And I got wind of it. It's got carrot, celery, beet, ginger, you know,
yes,
apple. Yeah.
That's my juicing regimen. I juice all the time. I love it.
I haven't had just carrot juice, but it's supposed to be really good.
It is really good. I tend to do carrot and beet or carrot and apple.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
With a little ginger.
Well, ginger, very, very big anti-cancer.
Anti-cancer, anti-inflammatory. That's why I juice so much.
Yeah. But yet you were still lit up. That must even mean more so. Like, can you imagine how bad off you'd be if you didn't have your healthy lifestyle?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And some of these people couldn't work. They couldn't really function.
Yeah, we really show in the film many things, but one of which is that there are various stages of the syndrome. There are people that are highly functioning that manage it, and there are people that are not managing well. And part of it is access, you know, part of it is knowledge, which is part of what the film is to do, is some education, but it's also access to appropriate healthcare. You know, we live in a system that if you can't afford to pay for a yoga class, massage, if you can't afford to go to your Reiki specialist, if you can't afford organic juice, you know, you're not getting the help that you need with this particular syndrome, because they'll pay for your pills that are really toxic to you. They'll pay for surgery for you, but they won't actually do things that really, really help you. Most insurance plans.
Yeah, I wrote down something that was powerful to me. We treat acute pain, not chronic pain. And that was real obvious.
Yeah,
with that.
You have only a few minutes. You go into your healthcare provider. How many minutes did they spend with you? And that's part of the reason why fibro is difficult to, for some people, and certainly was for me, to diagnose, because I would go in one time and I had X wrong, and I would go back the next 6 months or a year later and something else would be wrong. And they'd only spend about 5 minutes with you, and they're not looking at holistically. They're not asking you about things like, well, what's your diet? What's your stomach? What's the, you know, they don't have the time in the system.
Yeah. But what's so interesting, it's like planning, right? If you make time to plan, you have more time. Yes. With the healthcare system, what I realized is I had an issue with my hip. And I went in and I was getting this shooting pain down my leg, and they sent me to physical therapy and the physical therapy helped, felt better. Well, guess what? It came back. And so just out of sheer luck, my husband played rugby, and there was a couple, he played rugby, and they were both chiropractors. And she saw me limping, walking along the sideline. And she said, Lori, something's going on. Let me look at you. And she said, I want you to come into the office. I didn't know, I'd never been to a chiropractor. And I learned so much from that experience, because I go to the chiropractor now like every 6 weeks, because now I'm proactive. So yeah. Physical therapy is like reactive. You get hurt, okay, come in for 10 sessions, but there's nothing in place before it happens to prevent it from happening.
I think that has honestly been the key to my success.
Yes.
Is that I've always been proactive about my health. Always. Took charge of it. Because I felt that. I don't know if it was intuitive. I don't know if it's because I was a dancer and was so aware of my body. I was so aware of everything that I was putting into my body, how it felt, because I was like, when you're a professional Broadway dancer, you're an elite athlete. Essentially, you're doing 8 shows a week. They're asking you to do things that are very difficult repeatedly. And so it's like training for the Olympics. You train. And you can only eat a certain diet, and you can, you have to go to bed at a good time. And, all of those things that athletes have to do, you have to do as a dancer. And so that was my background. So I think because of that, I was hyper aware of what I was putting into my body, how it felt, and the things that I needed to do in order for my body to maintain optimal health.
Yeah. Yeah. You could also say partly it's part of your destiny too.
Yeah.
To make the film and impact a lot of people. So,
I mean, it was definitely part of my destiny. I mean,
yeah.
Who would have thought of all the people in the world that they would ask to be involved in the film? And then for me to say, yeah, I'll direct it. And then for me to end up with fibromyalgia is, in retrospect, it makes sense, because 8 times more likely if you have a first relative. Well, I didn't know that. Didn't know that until making the film when that came out. And when that came out in the film, I was like, oh.
I know. I could tell, like, when you had that conversation with the person who said that. Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy. Well, I am a big fan of So You Think You Can Dance, and that they are like Olympians.
Yeah.
I tell you, you can tell like what they go through for those performances. And it's great. It's great. Okay. So a couple things before we wrap up that I wanted to touch on was, one of the treatments was interesting. Myofascia release.
Myofascial.
Okay. So what is done there?
Yeah. I'm not even really 100% sure, to be perfectly honest with you. It was quite an experience. And rather than try to intellectualize it, I tried to just let go. It's a form of massage. It's a way of manipulating. It's like chiropractic. It's a way of manipulating the fascia in the body, and it's an emotional release.
Yeah. What is the fascia, though? I mean, clearly the guy knew what he was doing, right?
He definitely knew what he was doing, but basically what he was doing was he was manipulating sort of like the stuck energy in the body.
Yes.
Maybe the best way to say it. And
you had a lot in like the upper.
A lot in my upper back. Neck and shoulders. Mm-hmm. And that's my spot. That's where I always gather it. I've always had trouble there. I had an injury there, and I think that might be part of it. I got hit in the back of the head and knocked out, and I had this old injury there, and it's always been stuck there. So he basically, I laid on the table, and he was manipulating me like a chiropractor or massage therapist would do. And I just like had this like emotional breakthrough. It was really intense. Honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting too, that they see a tie between trauma, mm-hmm. and it can be trauma that's like stress overload trauma.
Yeah. Yeah, big T trauma or little T trauma.
Doesn't
need to be like,
car accident.
Yeah.
Abuse. Yeah. Yeah. That was interesting. Things. Yeah.
My mother believes that her fibromyalgia started because she had breast cancer.
Yes, that's right.
She was going through radiation, which she didn't say in the film is also, again, very private, but I'll spill the beans. I'll spill the family beans, is that her sister also died of cancer that same year. And so I think it was this combination of her sister's death of cancer with her cancer, and it just sort of triggered this fibromyalgia in her. It is often a trauma trigger. And, you know, we joke because I had quite a few traumas growing up. I was abused, sexually abused. And so that could have been the trigger. I was in my 20s. I was mugged at gunpoint. Like, there's so many possibilities. I had a series of traumas that I don't even know. People say, well, what's your trigger? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know when I've had this. I feel like I've had it probably forever looking back.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like that film, speaking of film, once I got the diagnosis, it was like I saw the movie of my life flash before me, and things just started to like connect. All these dots began to connect, and like a flashback sequence. It was really amazing.
Yeah. And I mean, this is just probably the director instinct in you, but one of the things I loved, because I know you personally, was the zooming in on the Christmas tree ornament. That was little Nick.
Yeah.
That was like, oh, you were such a cute little guy. I was just like, oh, hugs for the little Nick. Yeah. And the thing that you didn't share in the film was your mom's reaction to, because you were really worried about that. And I know as a mom, I would feel like horrible if I felt like I gave my kids something genetically.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's interesting because with documentary, you don't always get everything.
Yeah.
You try to get everything, but you don't always get everything. And we got it and didn't get it. So it just didn't work, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Such as documentary, right? But we did have a scene afterwards, obviously, where we talk about it. But I didn't get the in-the-moment reaction, unfortunately.
And how did she handle it?
So much better than I thought she was going to. You know, and that's why I realized, oh, it was actually my worry, my fear, as much as it was hers. Yes, she had said in the past she was worried about it, you know, passing it on to others in the family. She had that worry, but I think she knew.
Yeah, yeah.
No,
and you know, she, and maybe she didn't feel so bad because you're handling it so well.
Yeah.
You know, if you were really sick, then that would have been different.
And now what I say is that, oh my gosh, I have, you know, this master's degree in fibromyalgia from studying it for 7 years. So if anybody should have this diagnosis, it's me, because I know how to handle it. I've learned from the top of the top, the experts in their field. How fortunate am I? Talk about fortunate to have. And if I ever do have any problems, I have these people on speed dial because they become friends, right? So how fortunate am I that to be given this diagnosis, but to have this huge resource and this network of what they call the fibromyalgia warriors, these, you know, people around the world connecting to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can only imagine what that one person told you about. It could be genetic. Like when you went back and said, guess what? I have fibromyalgia. She must have been, I could have guessed that.
That's basically what she said. She was like, yeah, I knew.
That's funny. Yeah.
Your reaction to it all.
So if somebody is listening and thinks they might have fibromyalgia, well, first of all, what would be the signs? And then secondly, what would you recommend they do as a next step?
Yeah. So one of the problems with fibromyalgia and the diagnostic process is that fibromyalgia manifests itself differently in different people. And that's one of the reasons why it's difficult. But there are some general markers. Certainly widespread pain that lasts longer than 3 months. Chronic fatigue, not chronic fatigue. That's a particular brand of fatigue. But fatigue. Sometimes it's brain fog. And a lot of people have digestive issues. Now, there are other manifestations as well, but those are the primary. And so if you have those on a repeated basis, and it may come and go. That's one of the other characteristics of it. It's just, it's not necessarily all the time. You might feel fine for a week or two and then you're back into it. But if you have those, I would highly suggest seeking out somebody who is aware and has knowledge of fibromyalgia, because your doctor may not be trained in it. Particularly the older school doctors are not as trained in fibromyalgia. And even young ones don't necessarily get it, know it, or understand it. They may go, oh yeah, you have fibromyalgia. And then they'll do what they did to my mom, which is, here's some painkillers. We don't know what else to do for you.
Yeah.
And it all
yeah, I had, when I had chronic fatigue syndrome, and I just recently had a doctor on who was, we talked about medical gaslighting.
Yeah.
Because I heard about dating gaslighting, but I was like, oh, that's an interesting concept, because that happened to me when I had chronic fatigue syndrome.
Yeah.
I actually had the doctor said to me when I went in there for the umpteenth time that something was wrong with me. And he said, with this little clipboard, he looked at me, he goes, are you married? Like insinuating that I was promiscuous and had some sort of like, I mean, I was like shocked. I was like, yeah, I just had my second child. Come on. Like, it was like, yeah, yeah. So
there's a lot of gaslighting in for people with fibromyalgia, told it's all in their head. It's not real, but you know, but it is real. And it is in your head, but not in the way that they're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And so seeking out, if you can, if you have that option, to seek out somebody in that specializes in fibromyalgia. And there's a resource. And if you go to our website, invisible-film.com, there's resources there to help you find the right people and to help with ideas of how you can manage on your own. Because here's the thing, as we say, the tagline of the film is fibromyalgia, a life sentence. One of the characters in the film talks about how you're not going to die from fibromyalgia, but you're going to die with fibromyalgia. You can be in what we like to say is remission. I'm in remission from, but it never goes away fully. And so managing your care the best way you possibly can is the way to do it. It's the way to go. And so finding what works for you, the right combination of things, because it's different for everyone. That's one of the frustrating things, that you just can't be written a prescription of do this, do that, do this, and you'll be fine. So finding what works for you, and it takes some trial and error, and it takes some time, and having patience and compassion with yourself is really important.
Yes, I appreciate that. And what does Nick do?
Yeah, what does Nick do? So every day, Nick practices a bit of yoga. Every day, Nick meditates and does some breath work. Nick has a gratitude practice. Nick does a lot of mindful exercises. Nick eats healthy. And not all the time. I'm not, you know, 100% all the time on the healthy train. There are times I go off, but I also then know what I'm going to feel like. And so I gauge, well, is that worth it? Is what I'm about to do worth it? I'm really mindful of what I'm putting in my body. But
yeah, when we went out to dinner in Sedona last week, the menu, we went to this Italian restaurant with a group of people, and it wasn't ideal for, And so you're gluten-free, I guess.
Low gluten, dairy-free.
Low gluten. Okay. Dairy-free. Okay.
Low gluten, dairy-free. It's about inflammation for me, and dairy causes high inflammation, and so does gluten in the body.
And sugar.
That's the worst. Oh my God, I love sugar. And so that's really hard for me. Honestly, that's where my cheat goes. Like when I was saying, well, I'm not perfect, it's because I'm over there eating pie. You know, I'm over there eating a cake that I-
Especially like, this time of year.
Especially this time of year. It's like the worst time of year for that, but I do my best. But I also know that I don't want to deprive myself of eating a beautiful piece of cake or a pie. So I look at it in terms of ratio. What else am I eating today? So that it's not that if I overload on too many things, then I can be in trouble. I can have one drink. That's where my line is. Maybe two if I'm lucky, but not two martinis. You know what I mean? Like, I know that's my line. Anything over that, I start to not feel good. And so, and I don't mean feel good like hungover. I mean, like the next day, I have a really hard time getting out of bed. It's not, it's beyond a hangover. And so I know where that line is for me. And so I make choices that align with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Two drinks rarely would give you a hangover, I would think.
Yeah. Well, you know, for me, it's like, I can't get out of bed the next day.
So, yeah. Yeah. So that's definitely something else I would say.
That's something I didn't understand in my youth. I was like, how is it that everyone else, see here again, that flashing back where you're like, oh yeah, in our youth, you know, when we're 20 years old and everyone's out having their fifth drink and I'm dying. You know, like, I'm like, why is this happening to me? Why can't I drink like everybody else? I had no idea why. I just thought I was sensitive.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. Well, this has been so, I think, enlightening, and I appreciate it so much. I appreciate you for, you know, going through the 7-year process, and some people I think would give up, you know, finally, just can't finish it, you know? And so that you've persevered and.
I think that's part of what, you know, the manifestation process, dialing it back to manifestation, is sometimes things take time. Sometimes it's perseverance. Sometimes it's patience. Sometimes you're not ready. Imagine if we'd finished the doc in 2 years, I would never have found out that I had fibromyalgia. So everything, it's about to talk about that destiny thing. Like things happen in a reason and a time. And sometimes it may not be the timing that you necessarily want, but it's the timing that you need.
So, so true. Thanks for that. And everything in life, right? The goals we want and the,
Work.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for having me and for sharing the story of the role in the film. And I really appreciate it.
Yeah. It was an hour and 15 minutes of well worth my time. So thanks so much for coming back on. And have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy holidays.
Happy Hanukkah. All the things.
All the things.
Happy New Year. All right. Thanks, Nick.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Living Your Spark Second Half podcast. If you'd like to watch my guest interviews, you can find the video version of this podcast on my Not Your Average Grandma YouTube channel. Also, you can check out what I have going on at the moment by going to my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com or find me on Instagram or Facebook at notyouraveragegrandma. If you like this episode, please mention it to a friend and don't forget to leave a review so I know the topics you like best and can bring you more of that content in upcoming episodes. Last but not least, remember to always listen to that inner voice that will never steer you wrong and make living from the most sparked place possible your biggest priority. When we do that, we make the world a better place.